Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
conversation.
Hooray!
Hooray!
I felt I had to chip in with a hooray because there's just
Yeah.
two of us.
It would have been very, very lonely, just me shouting hooray in the corner.
Also, it's like you're happy to be joined with me rather than like, hooray, Rich, I'm with you again. Oh, yeah, it's fine, but I'm not interested. Anyway, hello, I'm Richard Nicholas, and with me for our chat about films and that is Anthony Evans.
How's it going?
Anthony, it's just me and you again.
It is. It's like the good old days, Rich.
Better. It's going to be better. I think we need to whittle it down just to you, to be honest, but it will be all right. We talked about toys alone. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, we keep grudges. You ditched us, Steve. You ditched us. You didn't watch 10 minutes of that film.
No resentment, though.
But check out Toys, the film bin conversation-y thing that we do, and this is a
Yes.
different one, so good. Oh, the film this week is Clockwise, and Anthony, you picked it, so you should tell the listeners the details.
So directed by Christopher Morahan and written by Michael Frayn, Clockwise from 1986 follows the exploits of an extremely fastidious and time-efficient headmaster of a local comprehensive school, played by John Cleese, who must make his way to an important conference to deliver a keynote speech in front of all the other headmasters in the country. This is complicated, however, when he misses his train and must find alternative ways of getting there, meeting many frustrating situations and eccentric people on the way who all seem to be conspiring not just to make him late, but to drive him insane too. Clockwise stars John Cleese, as I've already said, Alison Steadman, Penelope Winton, Stephen Moore, Sharon Maiden, Joan Hickson, Geoffrey Palmer, as well as a whole host of small little appearances from many British people.
British people, not even actors.
British.
There's some sitcom actors in here that are littered throughout as well.
Yes, it's a treasure trove of like British TV kind of actors.
It's a who is that of British acting rather than a who's who.
Some of the, oh, that guy from that
The
thing
one with the
once.
woman, the sitcom, the families, the school, the it's like that, isn't it? That's who they are to me. Sorry, I don't know them exactly. But we should talk about our expectations because, that's what we do. This film's as old as me. That's not interesting, but, it dates me, doesn't it? Like,
That's a good, like, you're older than me.
and I suppose it was made before I was born. It's not that interesting a link, but a link nevertheless. I always like film. I don't always like films that are from the year of my birth. That would be an appalling taste. But I always like to know when they are.
We'll see which one has aged better, you or the film.
I had seen this before because it came free with a newspaper. The DVD did.
Oh, I see. One of those kinds of films, eh?
Yeah, but like many films that come free with a newspaper, they're not worth the disc they're printed on, or lasered on, or whatever. I don't know. Lots of films can be terrible that come free, but it had John Cleese on the front, and it had a clock background for some reason. I don't know. It had like a Big Ben on the background, which I don't see the link in. Obviously, Clockwise is the link, but I don't think Big Ben features. Doesn't matter. I'm rambling.
No. Yeah, it's weird. The other poster that I saw is just John Cleese in a bath looking a bit awkward.
There aren't,
Clockwise.
yeah, there aren't a lot of good posters. There's one where he's sort of caught between two clocks, which makes a bit more sense, a bit more,
Yes.
artistic. But there isn't really a good poster for it. But I got it free with I got it free with a newspaper, and I watched it. And at the time, it was several years ago. I just thought, it's all right, but I don't know. I prefer Monty Python and stuff. Like that's kind of what I thought. But then, revisiting it was interesting. I hadn't, remembered it very well, but I liked seeing it again. Why did you pick it, Anthony?
I don't know. I guess I wanted some eccentric Britishness on the list somewhere, and I just remembered this film out of nowhere. I remember like finding it back in many years ago when I was in my like Monty Python kind of John Cleese phase, where you're like looking for other things by him, and I found this, and it just kind of sprung my mind. I remember it being okay.
Yeah.
So, but I thought I'd put it up. Expectations this time? I suppose I remembered it being good, so I was expecting some nice kind of farcical fare.
Yeah.
With John Cleese being John Cleese.
It kind of in the more Fawlty Towers neck of the woods than, say, Monty Python, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. Well, like John Cleese's character in this is kind of really channeling Basil Fawlty most of the time.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing, though. I think he definitely like does a good job of being a headmaster as well.
Yes.
I mean, that's what he has to do. But like, as opposed to a hotelier who's all wound up in his own hotel. But like he does nail the headmaster manner and kind of approach. He just has the right voice, and it's in the right time in his life where he just is the right age and look for a headmaster in a British school.
Yeah, I quite agree. I mean, I think he really sells it, like at least at the beginning anyway, as to being the kind of fastidious headmaster, but not too pompous and up himself.
Yeah.
But just enough.
Yeah, it's kind of, if anything, it's a pastiche of teaching, school, and headmastery. Like, it's kind of, it's like it's written to really channel all of the things you had to say about headmasters and your feelings on the British school system and things. I think it's, you know, it interprets the British school mentality and the way British people are, especially in this sort of middle-aged period of their lives. Like, there's a lot of jokes that would probably make middle-aged people really chuckle because they'd either relate or just get know people who are like who appear in this film.
Yeah, I think you touched upon something there. I think this film will go down well with slightly older people.
The people who are like, you know, between 40 and 60, probably who had children who were leaving the house in the 90s, you know, and leaving home. Like, it's kind of my mum and dad's kind of comedy, I'd say. It's sort of, it's very British. It's steeped in Britishness.
Yes, and very much so.
And it's very light comedy. It isn't, like, particularly hilarious all the time. And I think it helps if you've come from, like, a certain era of British schooling or, you know, indeed were, you know, around the sort of mums who would take old ladies out on from hospital and take, like, the old mad old ladies out. And my mum does do that. She takes mad old ladies out for day trips. And it really strikes a chord with that kind of, like, I don't know, like a sort of, not a middle-class Britain, but a sort of middle-aged Britain anyway, of nice British people who just live in their little, like, white world, like, you know? So I think...
Yes, of politeness and restrained anger.
Yeah. A lot of it plays on this idea of like, formality as well, and somehow British people are too polite to say, this situation is insane, and I'm going to say something. They all... There's so many times a large room of people will just put up with a really bizarre situation just because of formalities, and I think it plays on that gag quite a lot.
Yes, especially at the end of the film.
Yeah, so it is kind of a film about headmastery and a certain type of world in Britain that is probably a bit alien to a lot of people. You know, the people growing up in the slums of Brazil might find it hard to relate to sort of middle-class suburban Britain, but I think it's an interesting comedy, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, right, when you've got Monty Python, and they're, like, massively famous, they've kind of, you know, they've made it in America quite a lot, so they've got a bit more momentum than other British things in comedy. So they're world-famous comedians, and they're known for the Python stuff, like the films and the sketch show. And then, but John Cleese has done loads of other films, and they've all gone off and done other projects, whether it's directing or, you know, acting or just presenting. And John Cleese went on to do many different levels of quality films, I think, didn't he? And I think this is middling. Maybe.
Middling, definitely. It's nice to see him in like a starring role. There are surprisingly few films with him with the starring role out there.
Yeah, usually as well, he'll be a cameo that one of the other Pythons has pulled into their movie.
Yeah.
Just as a like, oh, come on, make it feel a little bit more like Monty Python by being in this, please. And, yeah, like he turns up in things now and again, and he probably did have a lot of, at least in Britain, Fawlty Towers, even though it's like, you know, a ridiculous, like, was it like 6 episodes or 12 episodes or something?
It's not that many, is it?
It's like one episode of Fawlty Towers, it's like one of the best sitcoms of all time. It's heralded as one of the best sitcoms of all time. And this is in that ballpark, isn't it?
Yes. Well, yeah, it's certainly in a similar vein to kind of Fawlty Towers. Well, if only in the kind of John Cleese's kind of somewhat upper crust, kind of deadpan British eccentric person.
Yeah, sort of struggling and escalating problems, and you know, like just beating up a car seems to be a thing in this, and it is a bit in one episode of Fawlty Towers, I think. But I think it's going to struggle because it's not as brilliant as some of the comedies he is associated with.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the things about this film was it was a lot more typical than I was expecting. I think I was expecting something a little bit more zany, given the kind of premise of it. But really, it's all kind of just a humdrum. Nothing is particularly heightened.
Yeah, like the biggest, most insane points are kind of... I mean, there are some ridiculous moments. We go, this definitely wouldn't happen. Like, at the point where you're trying to get to your... Like, it's just the linchpin. The key to it, really, is that he's going to be the chairman of the all-males exclusive sort of headmastery club thing. And he's going to be the chairman of this, and it's a big honour for him because he's from a comprehensive school, which is like a slightly more working-class school or whatever in Britain. And he's going to get this, but he's waylaid by many things. And at times, it's just little mistakes, and it's fair enough, and it's slightly funny. But then there are, like at one point, he is dressed as a monk with one of his pupils, and they've stolen a car, and he's robbed the clothes of someone. You know, it's kind of like, okay, this is ridiculous now. But it is kind of quietly, like, you know, it's not overly zany and mad either, you know, like you're saying.
Yeah, I just... it's always, I think, going to come down to, like, the wasted potential factor here in Film Bin. And I just can't help but think that the kind of caliber of people who are working on this, this should have been something a bit more than it turned out to be.
Yeah, I think there are good jokes in there, though. There's plenty of moments I enjoyed. And
it's a pretty enjoyable romp for most of the film, I think.
So you could say, I may not be pro-clockwise, but I am definitely not anti-clockwise. Contrived. right, so some of the good bits we should talk about then in more detail. For example, there's a really good joke at the start of the film. Actually, the first bit of the film is one of the funny bits where they establish John Cleese as this not obsessed, but very fastidious timekeeping headmaster who's got a view over the kind of school premises from his office, and he watches out the window for anyone, like any kids or teachers, you know, doing something wrong, and then gets on the tannoy and basically either puts them in detention or tells them what to do or where to go, doesn't he?
Yes, just kind of repeats 9:20.
9:20.
Yeah, I like this kind of opening scene. I thought it was quite tight, actually, in terms of like filmmaking. I thought it was well written, and like it kind of sets up Cleese as being like this fastidious person, like quite quickly, and then it introduces a bit of backstory to the plot, and then it kind of introduces some of the characters and the way the schools run. I thought it was a very nicely written little scene and well observed.
It is. And we see him practicing his speech and kind of multitasking and dealing with like people, and they kind of interrupt him, but he carries on in a kind of slightly arrogant, self-obsessed way with his speech practicing, and then like telling people off from the window with his 9:20 kind of.
There's a lot of jokes involving like random numbers and letters.
Yeah.
Like E3 and AH at 7:20.
It seems just the idea of numbers is funny to the writer. Like.
No, I thought it was good. It kind of set up this kind of complicated, efficient system that they have in the school. And they show that it works, but they also show that it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So.
And also, you do get a lot of, like, teachers who hate a certain class, and they're always referred to as like, oh, J9, oh, you don't want J9, not at 8:15 in the morning. Like, there's always that one class that is usually like got a code letter, because we basically have a very unoriginal way of naming schools in Britain. Although ours were just named after trees, which is kind of lame.
Yes, but we did have like letters and numbers as well, yeah. Like 7H Bay.
Yeah. Who was a terrible class? Usually year 8 are awful. Like, there's usually one year 8 class that you don't want to have. Something about being in year 8 that makes you the worst student of all time. And you either mature or you don't. Like, or you're excluded or something. But anyway, like, it is a good scene. It sets up a lot. And it was funny the way that, you know, Cleese basically sends all these kids to detention for, like, I think for us, wasn't it like 9:15 you could possibly be waiting outside the staff room if you got in detention?
I don't remember.
You never did, you SWAT. You never had to stand there, never lipping back to teacher or anything.
Nope, not me. Oh, good boy.
Did you ever have a break of detention? Because 5 minute detention is usually just being held during break time outside a doorway for a bit, and that's not that big a problem.
Yeah, usually you get caught up like with the whole class kind of thing, where it's like, okay, the whole class stays back for 5 minutes.
Yeah. For some reason, like the classes where I would occasionally get detention, because I didn't often, it would usually be a language class like Welsh or Spanish, because for some reason, language classes were an environment for anarchy and being cheeky and then going too far and then having to do detention.
I tell you what, that wouldn't happen in this school, though, would it?
Because he's so strict and, oh, yeah. Like, I thought it was true to life, though, at times.
Oh, yeah, I thought, yeah, like I said, it was very well observed. You could, it really felt like that was the school that I used to go to, just from the way it looked and felt. It was really nice.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a good opener, and it sets up the scene of, I've got this meeting, I'm fastidious about time, and I'm a strict, you know, and it also does the start where, he takes the assembly, which is kind of the classic classic headmaster thing to do, is you give a little talk or speech at the assembly and bore everyone to tears just at first thing in the morning. And it's a good scene to set up how he is as a headmaster and how he's kind of strict, but he also is funny and personal with the students as well.
He really has a rapport with the school, and you can see that. So he doesn't come off, like, he could have come off as quite big-headed and kind of pompous.
Yeah.
But he really does kind of, like, acknowledge the contribution of the school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he comes off not so bad from it, really.
Because he's in danger of becoming a demon headmaster, which is a whole different thing.
But I really like the assembly scene as well, how it kind of just captures the kind of weird awkwardness that assemblies have.
Yeah, and the selecting out the children and by name and kind of shaming them, but also the, like, the little incidents that go on that you have to kind of roll with, where people laugh at something, or, like, you know, it had all those little moments that most people are familiar with in an assembly. And it was crucial to set him up as a bit nicer than just a strict headmaster, because of the ending where it comes to fruition, where even with, like, all these adults, he's still this perfect headmaster who controls a room full of other headmasters and people messing about and things. Like, in that scene at the end where basically all the people who've been chasing him down, including his wife who thinks he's having an affair, police officers, mad old ladies, you know, they all keep bursting in and ruining his speech at the end. And he sort of deals with it in a kind of funny headmastery way, even though they're all adults. And that kind of links up the beginning and end really well, I thought.
Yeah, it definitely bookmarks it, doesn't it?
I mean, we might as well talk about the end a bit, because it's, like, relevant, but how did you feel about it as a conclusion? We have a lot of stuff happen to scupper the guy's journey. He just makes it to his, appointment on time and gets to make the speech. And, albeit dressed in a cheap suit that's falling apart, and, you know, accompanied by people they didn't expect and stuff. But, like, did it feel like it paid off as an ending to the film?
To me, honestly, it didn't feel like it concluded enough, other than the actual, like, geographical journey that happens.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Because it's quite fast-paced up until then. Well, the film does have some pacing problems in the middle. But, you know, it's romping along. And then it just kind of, like, finishes, really, at the end. It's kind of like if it was an actual road journey itself, it's always going to kind of be let down by the end, because it's now just been, like, overhyped.
Yeah.
And it's the journey, really, that's the fun bit.
And his,
or at least the bit that you remember.
Yeah. And his speech is funny because he's sort of putting all of these people in line and making headmasters feel like children again. And that's kind of a victory for him. But it's also a kind of... his speech gets a bit more... He gets more frustrated by all the interruptions, but it doesn't really... It's not a massively hilarious payoff. And then they kind of say... And then he walked out... He left everyone awkwardly singing a hymn without music, walked out like it was a regular assembly, and gets arrested.
And then the film just kind of, like, wraps up outside,
yeah,
at a distance.
Yeah.
It's weird, yeah.
And then he was arrested and charged with, you know, all these crimes of, like, stealing a car, the crimes were basically not paying for petrol, stealing a car, I don't know.
Kidnapping,
yeah. So he's got all these potential charges that can't really be sorted out. All the people who are chasing him have kind of got to explain what's going on. And then they just end with a gag about how he got his left and right a bit confused and some apples are spilled on the road. Hilarious.
Yeah, it is a bit. I feel like they set up a few too many plot threads, and at the end they didn't really know what to do with them, so the film just kind of stops.
Just went, it was awkward to deal with, and he probably went to check.
But I see what they were going for.
Yeah.
And Cleese's performance during it is still very watchable and a joy to watch. So, but yeah, it's like when you have like a road movie like this, I mean, you need the crescendo to be as big as the rest of the movie.
Yeah, you need, like, and trousers on fire, massive car pileups, zany stuff happening, massive stunts. You know, you need crazy, not a speech that was a bit funny.
Yeah, so it really didn't deliver. And it wasn't... And you didn't really... I don't think felt like John Cleese's character really learned anything from his journey.
If anything, he was driven mad, and that was it.
That was it. There was, like, a moment where he sort of comes out of his kind of, like, time-efficient, fastidious nature and is, like, contemplating the world when he's, like, dressed as a monk in a ditch.
Yeah.
But it's just a fleeting moment and it doesn't hang on to it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't see the metaphorical journey, per se, that John Cleese has come through, other than... It's just been a kind of hectic day, really.
Yeah, because he doesn't have that much to learn. He could probably do with treating his wife a bit more nicely. And most of the time he spends his... most of the time he's ignoring everyone and thinking in his own head about his speech. So he's quite a... You know, he's not the nicest guy. And he doesn't learn a lot, like you say. And his wife he takes for granted and sort of... There's a look of, oh, sorry, dear. I'm sorry you think I had an affair, but I clearly didn't. And we won't be addressing this because the film's over, so...
Yeah, the film kind of ends when his wife turns up and they just kind of share an awkward look.
Yeah.
That doesn't really explain anything. And then he just leaves and the film ends.
Yeah. But, you know,
yeah.
there's still good comedy. And one of the things I was going to mention was early on where it's thing like he's on this journey, his wife dropped him at the station, and his main problems could be solved by him, you know, instead of saying, like, again, basically the left and right thing, isn't it?
It's like, yeah, it's the main conceit is he constantly says the word right
As in correct or okay. And then, of course, when people go left and you go right and they go right. And it's like, oh, I'll be going right and not left. And, you know, that will mean cars go the wrong way and he gets on the wrong train. And it's like, if you just said correct or okay to, like, when people give you directions, you'd solve this problem. And also, this film couldn't be made in this day and age because, you know, you'd have a mobile phone and you'd phone people up and instantly sort your life out. Like, he seems to have to go to a lot of trouble to go to, like, a payphone or to try and contact people. And that just couldn't happen now. Like, you could just send an email to the headmaster and say, I'm sorry, I'm running late. Or text your wife and say, come back, the train is... I've gone the wrong... You know, like... I guess they could have it so that, oh, no, he's lost his phone or something. But it's pretty awful. They could borrow someone's phone. There's no way of doing this film now with the technology we have.
That's true. Well, there is a point where he does try and phone ahead. Yes. But it turned into a kind of not-so-funny scene about phones not working.
Yeah. But I did like that there was a nosy old woman. Like, is this when he was smashing up the phone in anger?
Yes.
And the bit I did like was there's an old woman, you know, curtain twitching and looking out and getting all cross because there's people are vandalising. Like, a middle-aged man is vandalising the thing, even though he wasn't yet, and getting all paranoid about people, like, smashing up the phone boxes. And I did like that kind of jokes that, like, the joke centred around old biddies poking their nose out of a window thing was kind of, that kind of worked, I thought.
Yeah, I think it's, the film is more successful where it's really observant of kind of British life. So like you said before, the bit where you have Cleese's wife in the film, like, taking out old biddies.
And they're all just mad. Like that. And, kind of...
and they're all, yeah, they're all just mad. And you kind of recognise each one of them as well.
Because we've got the one who's telling the endless story of, like, one of the glasses she's on. Like, basically that age-old conversation. My grandmother and a few other old biddies I know have had that thing of bemoaning the objects that have been passed on to different family members in the will and why it's all wrong, and you can't have the sherry glasses. And I saw that clock in her house. She not knows it's worth £100. I can't believe my mother gave it to her. You know, it's like she kind of goes on and on doing that. There's the woman who thinks she's always going to hospital and wandering off.
And then just the kind of, like, dotty, nice one.
Who says everything's nice all the time. And that is, like... that is a true thing. Like, there are kind of people who've lost their faculties a bit, but are still pleasant. And they are these, like, types of old ladies in the world. And it's kind of nice to see that on the screen, because they're not usually in films. But, you know, they're, like, at times it works. That gag worked, particularly when John Cleese is looking for his wife in the hospital. And just as he runs off, they slowly come out. They spend ages panning, listening to these conversations these old ladies are having, as he can't find them. And then just as they get in the car and go, he comes out. So that it kind of works. When they play on things like that. And there's lots of good bits. Like, there are bad. There's good and bad, right? So, good bits. I like the gag with his son, who, when he's like, he rushes home. And
where he just kind of has a conversation at him.
Yes.
You mean, yeah.
He preempts everything he's going to say, and then dashes out the house instantly and comes back. And then just before the son can say anything proper and agree to what he's saying, he's cross with him again. And it was a nice, funny gag, and it kind of worked.
I think... I liked all of the characters in the film, all the, like, minor characters, and they all had, like, all the actors were doing their best and whatnot, but that's the thing, they were all so small and weren't given that much time to leave an impact.
Yeah, and it's not like something like Rat Race with John Cleese in as well, where it's an ensemble and they're all massive comedy characters. It's basically John Cleese is the, you know... The vehicle, ironically, of the piece, where he's, like, the main focus, and all of these other characters are just in his life, whereas in a normal, like, road movie, everyone will be, like, a big character, and they'll all have a thing going on. So maybe that's, like, a problem, is that they are just side characters that don't have enough time on screen. But I will say there's one exception to... I like them all, they're all alright, like, but I didn't really find the stuff with... the teacher who is late and never finishes a sentence. I didn't like that joke. He would just always start sentences and not finish them. And it was just, that's all he would do. And it was stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, because I thought at the beginning that was just, they were just trying to set up more for Cleese's character rather than his.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he doesn't listen to anyone and he's finishing his sentences for him.
Yeah.
But it does just keep, the film... I think the film is too subtle sometimes. Because I didn't, for a long time, I didn't clock on that guy was having some sort of weird affair with the girl that's driving John Cleese.
Well, this is where why I circle him. Yes. It's not just that he's unfunny and it's not that good a gag. Maybe some people find it funny, but I did not. And it's true. Some people do start sentences, not finish them a lot. Like, but... this guy, he was in it, and he's also having an affair with a student, which is a subplot that's barely referenced. And like, Laura, who's travelling with John Cleese because he needs a lift, he bumps into a student, and he acquires her for the day in a kind of headmastery way. And she is having an affair with this like, bumbling teacher who's late and stuff. And that's just unsavory and wrong. I mean, she's like, what's it called when they're doing the A-levels? Sixth former?
Yeah.
So, you know, she's older at least, but still, no, this isn't okay. You can't have a teacher affairs story in here and not have it be some horrible sticking point.
Yeah, especially as the only other real reason that that character is there is to make a kind of joke at the end that there's no piano.
Yeah, that was the one character I thought you didn't need that. He could have been in it, but it, like, I don't know. I wouldn't have had the whole like joke about Laura having an affair with a teacher and stuff. And it just didn't work. I thought Laura was good, actually. She was one of the characters I really liked and was the most sympathetic, I think.
Yeah, definitely. She's definitely the one for the audience to attach to, I suppose.
And she's just a sixth former who's, you know, who owns the car that John Cleese has a lift in for most of the thing. And she puts up with him a lot and kind of sticks by him despite, you know, she basically pulls part of her car off, ruins her in the middle of nowhere and, like, gives her the worst day of her life. But she still sticks by him when other people have turned on him, you know?
Yeah, and sort of kind of weirdly hints at falling for him as well at the end as well.
It's odd.
Kind of odd.
Yeah.
That's just her character, I guess. She just likes older men.
That's something for teachers. Yeah. When Laura and that other teacher are in the same, like, assembly together, there's no, like, hint, look at each other. There's no sense of, like, anything there. There's no reason for their relationship to exist, really. Because they don't reference it particularly.
They really don't make it that obvious that they're having an affair.
Yeah, it's just kind of a throwaway joke to baffle John Cleese when she starts talking to him in the car ride, you know?
Yeah.
So, but one of the other things I did like was the mum character of Laura's mum, who thinks the car's been stolen and her daughter's been kidnapped because, you know, she's paranoid. I loved her character because she was always on the phone to her husband or whatever, getting all panicked and always saying how irate or how, like, mad the guy was. And he's, like, quite a calm-looking man. And he's just this guy who's turned up on a motorbike to help with the situation. And she's always telling everyone what his emotions are and how he feels. And, you know, like, I love the way she passed on messages to everyone as well. There's a very British character that I particularly, like, related to. Not related to me, but my mum and other people like that.
Yeah, I recognise that kind of character too. So, yeah, this is the kind of scene where I suppose it's the big misunderstanding where, like, all of the pieces are kind of set into motion for the film, aren't they? Where they all just come to the conclusion that John Cleese has sort of kidnapped
slash having
Laura,
an affair
with Laura, yeah, and they all have to go and find them somehow.
Yeah, because essentially, it's going okay. I mean, he's had a few setbacks, but he's basically getting a lift with a student who's happy to oblige because it means not go to school. And it's just like, it would be fine, but, I mean, they don't pay for petrol, and the wife of John Cleese sees him and assumes the worst and assumes an affair, even though he's clearly just talking to her. There's nothing. I mean, she's not expecting him to be in a petrol station with a girl, but that's the first misunderstanding. And then when John Cleese tells Laura to phone her mum, she phones her boyfriend or some bloke that she's seeing, which is this stupid teacher character. And instead of phoning her mum, you know, they're all paranoid then. And then it just sets them all off trying to find out where this guy is, this headmaster, and,
Yeah, but it's a really weird one because, like, at that moment, it's like, the chase is on, but there is no real chase because within, like, 2 or 3 minutes, they pass them on the road and are not seen again then until the end.
Yeah, exactly. There's no sense of, oh, they're going to find them, or they haven't. It's literally just, what if, it's like one car journey going wrong, and I've had some bad car journeys, like where you break down or whatever, and you get stuck behind some cows or something, and that those things happen, but it's all a bit, do you want to make a film about, you know, taking a wrong turn, getting stuck between some cows, and then they kind of make the wrong decision of driving through a field, and it's like, yeah, this is going to end badly, you're stuck in the
mud.
But like crashing into police cars and stuff, but really pedestrianly, just a little bump, and getting a ticket or whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing. Just like all the major kind of set pieces of the film are just really humdrum and not very memorable in the slightest.
Yeah, minor scrapes. Maybe hilarious when you're telling it back to your family about the horrible day you've had, but don't make a motion picture about, you know, bumping into a car or taking a wrong turn and getting stuck in the mud. And like, you know, it is funny when John Cleese is trying to push them out of the mud in the car and he's getting covered and then he decides to kick the car and falls in the mud.
Yeah, but like, how many times have you seen that scene in like a road movie?
It is a bit played out, definitely. I mean, you've got to get a bit dirty. You know, it's like Die Hard. By the end, you've got to be covered in mud and your shoes have to be missing and, you know, you have to be killing terrorists. No, wait. Wrong. No.
I suppose we should pick up like the other kind of mainish character.
Go on.
In the film, and that's Pat, played by Penelope Wilton.
Yes.
Who just appears in the middle of nowhere and just happens to be a friend of John Cleese, and then all of a sudden she's driving and that's it.
Well, in the vandalizing the phone scene we touched upon, she is the daughter of the paranoid mum who thinks there's vandals, and they become vandals, but that's besides the point. Mm. She comes out to confront this guy who's getting, you know, angry with a payphone. And it's like, oh, John, I haven't seen you in 20 years. I'm living in Australia. Let's catch up. And he's trying to... He's like, he feels like an embarrassed youth again because this woman knew him when he was a mess and couldn't keep time and was always late. And, you know, there's an element of kind of comedy building. And then they just kind of go, we need someone to drive the car because Laura's suddenly being a bit stubborn. I mean, fair enough. John Cleese crashed the car instantly, but she said, Laura's like, oh, you're not driving, but I will let you kidnap this woman and suggest she should test drive the car for no reason, and then make her drive you there.
Yeah. Then we hijack her somehow.
In what world was he like, I know, I'll get her to drive us away from the police, and then continue to let her drive us there, or just drop her off at a station, but like, this is a stupid idea. I get the police are coming, but you can't just tell this woman to drive you. And he kind of does. She puts up with it for a very long time, just John Cleese telling her where to go, and kind of basically kidnapping her, and she rightly gets annoyed and frustrated.
Yeah, I do like her reactions, though, to the building mayhem.
Sure.
And she's like, you know, she gets angry and she does some of the rash things. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, you did kind of kidnap her.
Yeah.
But it just seems so random.
It is.
It just felt like they just made it someone that John Cleese knew so they could slip in a line about him not always being so efficient.
I guess they just wanted to escalate a bit more, and it needed a bit more crazy, and that it provided it, but it was a bit stupid and odd that this situation occurred.
And the kind of there's a kind of like road movie kind of triangle where you need three people.
You need to pick up.
To be journeying, don't you?
You need to pick up hitchhikers on the way on a road movie to do. That's like a classic thing. You need to have more people to share your mad journey. And she's, you know, she's. She's all right, and the role kind of works. She plays it correctly, but it is kind of like out of nowhere. And she's then arrested, and I feel kind of bad because, you know, she got kidnapped by accident, and then she's being arrested for basically driving. She kind of decides, I'm going to steal your car because I'm frustrated. It's like, no, you can't just steal this poor young girl's car because your, you know, ex-partner, like, is annoying. It's a bit odd.
Yeah. But again, it's just like, I'd like to have seen a bit more of her in the film. But like everyone else, they're just not really given that much to do.
So there's one character that kind of makes an appearance just for a bit of a gag, and it's the farmer guy on the tractor.
Mm.
And I kind of liked that. I don't know what it was about, other than they wanted to have a bit of a joke about how, you know, this towny headmaster guy takes the countryside for granted, and like, I don't know, like, it seemed to have something up its sleeve about farmers being mistreated, but this farmer guy just sort of passively aggressively denies him a tractor and kind of is sitting on a tractor behind a bush, and John Cleese wants one to tow him out, but because he's been a bit rude to the farmer, the farmer's like, oh, is it? Maybe you will find a tractor by going up there, or maybe I will. I bet myself this jammy tart that I find it first. Nom nom nom. Like, it's a kind of funny scene. Did you like the farmer guy?
Honestly, I didn't. I found him a bit, because maybe it's because this is the start of like one of the kind of sags in the film, where it just kind of slows down and does nothing for a while. But I don't know. I liked the kind of stereotype of the kind of farmer, and it was funny, and it was all right for a while. But I just found that bit kind of annoying, to be honest with you.
And you would be like, "Oh, come on, guy! If you're on a tractor, just because I've been a bit like I'm having a bad day. I'm stuck in a field. Yes, I'm an idiot, but don't be a git. Help me out, please. Because I feel bad because it's like I'd want someone to give me a tractor if they had one. Don't deny me and tease me with your tractor sitting ways." But
it just seemed a bit weird because it's like he didn't really deserve it at that point.
No, and he does the farmer does help out the Laura and is it Pat?
Yes,
who are in the car. So he pulls them out. But the awkward thing, and it does come to a sag in the film, but I don't think it's that farmer bit. I think after that he ends up, for some reason, it's hilarious that of course he's found a monastery. It's like, yeah, I know, I find the clergy very funny, but turning up at a monastery is like, oh, isn't it my luck? A monastery where no one can ever help in a monastery. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and the only gag was just monks are silent.
But they're not really. You shouldn't assume. Unhelpful in every way.
And what? And yeah, I just don't know, they're just, you know, when something happens, they're not very useful because
they don't have a phone.
They just kind of stare at you.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's true, but it was just really stupid. And what was kind of odd is that John Cleese has, like, departed from the people in the field who are stuck, and he's given up a bit, and then he has a bath. And it's like, yes, you're covered in mud. Yes, you have to give up on getting to this headmaster thing. But you have still got two women waiting for you to rescue them. Do you want to just have a bath because it's funny? Like, it's just this weird moment where it's like the movie has decided that it's funniest for John Cleese to have a bath and make us all wait around for the film to get going again. And then it kind of does, just because, you know, Laura turns up and is looking for John Cleese to carry on because they've had the car pulled out. And it's just like, yeah, thanks for having a bath, film. Good job with your no comedy with the monks.
Yeah, so that bit just kind of happens.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happens. He loses his clothes and now he's dressed like a monk.
He's dressed like, yeah. They've taken his muddy clothes, which obviously he can't wear anyway, like to be washed or whatever, and he has to put on like an ecclesiastical robe, which just looks like a large bathrobe, to be honest. It doesn't look all that much like.
He doesn't wear it very well, does he?
But then he has a thing for wearing clothes that aren't his and not his size. But basically, they get marooned and they give up hope again at the side of the road because Pat has driven off and been arrested in the car. And the next bit, which I think I mentioned, is just the stupidest bit where they get a lift with a guy in like a businessman or something in a sports car. And there's a kind of awkward, like, oh, this guy's picked her up because she's a young girl, but doesn't realise there's a monk in a ditch that's also getting a lift. And John Cleese is kind of given up and is just staring off and not saying anything anymore. And then they imply that this guy's a creep and that he's kind of interested in her, like, and wants to, you know, just pick up an attractive young woman. And then she rolls with it and is like, we can trick him and get his clothes off him and you can have a suit to wear to your thing. And it's like, don't do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and the scene just, the whole thing is more cringing than funny.
Yeah.
And you're just watching it going, who would fall for this? This is so ridiculous. Of all the things that have been happening, just trying to get a man naked is the most ridiculously stupid thing in the whole film.
It is. It's like, why couldn't they just, like, surely a more logical solution is, oh, hi, mister, be a bit flirty so he does what you want, perhaps, but just get him to drop you, briefly call in a shop, perhaps. Like, pick up a cheap suit or something, like, in a town. But not rob the guy of his car and his clothes because... And, this guy is so gullible and dumb that they let's go for a walk. Oh, you get my meaning. Come for a walk. Yeah, you too, monk. And the guy's like, oh, I guess I'll roll with a monk coming. On one hand, I want to cop off with a young girl. But on the other hand, weird monk guy I didn't account for. I guess I'm game if he takes his clothes off too. It's like, what are you doing? You can't rob this man in this way. And we set up a character with it as this headmaster who's, he's given up, but this guy would not undress just so he can get someone's claws. Yeah. Like, why would this guy rob someone?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's meant to be, like, at that kind of point in a road movie, like, when all hope has failed, and it's kind of like, well, we've come this far, we might as well, like, push ourselves over the edge in order to get what we're doing. So in their cases, they're actually consciously robbing someone.
Yeah, it's like it crosses a line, though, that it shouldn't. Like,
yeah,
in a film,
exactly.
You have to be desperate. Like, it doesn't matter I'm going to win. Because road movies are like, I have to get to the end, my location, I have to win this thing. I have to do it. And it's about, in principle, I have to do it now. That's the idea. And you'll do desperate things, but it's just too desperate and too absurd that this character would do it and go along with it.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
It falls over the line of cringing more than funny, and it just doesn't work, and it kind of just slows the film down.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, all the things that have happened to him, when he's finished and done and makes it, other than robbing the guy, it can be sorted out. He can pay fines, he can pay for petrol, he can pay for, like, insurance and damages.
Everything up until that point, it's just a kind of misunderstanding or a mistake. But because they consciously kind of Bonnie and Clyde him, it's kind of, I don't know, it doesn't sit really well.
It doesn't.
Even though it's a kind of staple of a kind of like road journey movie that this point happens, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right for everyone.
Yeah, always someone has to get muddy and dirty, cars have to be wrecked, and people have to have changes of clothes that make them look stupid. Those are classics. But they don't work in this context because it's so realistic a comedy and so subtle. It feels like it kind of jumps the shark a bit.
Mm.
And then basically it comes to the conclusion we've already talked about, which is he turns up just on time. And the only other real gag is all of these people have turned up, like the mad old biddies, some police officers, like the Laura's parents all turn up. And they get ushered into one room.
The joke is, like, all of these people have turned up to see, like, John Cleese's character, and the people are slightly mildly put upon by it and usher them into a room.
It's basically... It's like,
that's the joke!
There's this... All these headmasters are very conservative and don't really have women at this meeting, which is a bit even in the 80s, is a bit, really? You can't just have a few women in the on the premises? Is it really that much of a big deal just because it's like, I don't know, you're the headmaster of Eton or something? It's like, no, but you must, you're like, is this that big a problem for you? But it's just to have all these musty old headmasters finding it being put upon and having to usher people into a pen and pen them in one room and make them tea so that they don't disturb the meeting. And it's just like, if they have come because the chairman, you know, John Cleese's character has been made the chairman of the headmastery rubbish, can't they just come and sit in the back or something? Is it that problematic? But no.
Because they don't seem too bothered by it when they actually do turn up at the assembly and sit down.
Yeah, but only because John Cleese is commanding and in charge of his speech, they all feel like it's too impolite to say anything and to say, get out! No women allowed in this meeting! No police officers! Or, you know, it's like, it's just really stupid. This is a really stupid idea. I mean, it works in terms of the speech being interrupted, but it makes no sense as a jeopardy, really. And it's just British politeness is funny, like it's the joke.
Yeah, like again, I can see what they're going for, but it's like this scene kind of like bookends the film with the first assembly scene, and you know he slowly starts treating all of these people like a school assembly.
Yeah.
And I get what they're doing, but it's just kind of a bit too obvious and repetitious.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, it walks a line of one man's frustrating life, and it could go like in the same realm as like Curb Your Enthusiasm, and kind of be a subtle comedy about one man's exasperation and his own problems being the brunt of his, like, you know, just the brunt of his problems are him, and it could be a more subtle comedy about people and behaviour, but it's also trying to do this zany thing a little bit to kind of make it feel more mad and like a comedy. But at those points, it's kind of implausible and silly and not fitting with the kind of rest of the jokes, you know?
Mm. I know.
So it's a mixed tone, as usual, on Spoilerfield. Like, that's the main problem.
Well, I don't know if it's a mixed tone, per se.
Sure.
But it's just not enough good tone.
A lot of good jokes. Comedies need to be funny, and I did have a smile on my face through lots of it, and it's because I related to the kinds of people and jokes they were doing.
Yeah, plus, like, Cleese is just, you know, is just John Cleese, and is always just a joy to watch.
You've done something wrong if you don't write in a scene in your film with John Cleese, if he isn't running about. If you don't make him run about, you've failed as a writer, because the man is funny when he's moving at pace and is panicked. It is funny.
Yeah, exactly. And for most of the film, he's quite restrained and kind of like he a lot of the time, he's just in a different plane of his existence to everyone else, because he's just not listening to them and just going through the things in his mind and not paying attention.
And they did well to mix him going over the speech in his head, ignoring people, and also being distracted and trying to do calculations for how much time he's got, and like, so his speech would start becoming his other thoughts. And I liked the way they conveyed that. That was kind of
There were a couple of moments when he would just say something to someone, and we know what it means because we heard what it says in his head, but they're just like,
what?
Yeah, like speech. It's on the train.
So there
it's
is
like,
yeah.
Even though we know what that means, like. Laura just looks at him like, okay.
Yeah.
And there's a few moments like that I liked. I liked all the other, like, characters, all the, like, kind of British kind of stereotypes that pop up, and they're quite well observed. But they really aren't given that much to do or that much funny to say throughout. It's just so small little bits. I wish there was more of everyone.
Yeah, and that's good, right? That means a lot of them must have done a good job.
Oh, yeah. I can't fault, like, any of the acting or any of the characters at all.
So there's a lot of good. It brings a lot of good. And you have to relate to it a bit, and you have to be forgiving. You can't be expecting, like, falling off your seat laughing stuff. But an enjoyable sort of smile-worthy comedy that will definitely have people between about 40 and 60 from Britain chuckling away. Oh, isn't he silly? Like, kind of, you know, it's definitely that kind of crowd's comedy.
Yeah, but it's just, that's the thing, it's very typical and just not average.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't expect from, like, some of the performers that are in this film. They have, like, a different pedigree, I suppose.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not a bad turn from Cleese, but it is top big hits, and it's understandable. I mean, you know, some of the other stuff. I mean, the things he's done for comedy are brilliant. Like, all of the Pythons can be proud of some of their achievements. Like, there's a lot of good stuff they've given to comedy. And Cleese is still one of my comedy heroes. But, you know, this is still good, and he's a convincing headmaster, but it isn't up there, is it? That's probably why it's come to us, our attention, is because it isn't heralded as brilliant. It's just this weird, you know, free DVD that comes with the newspaper. You know. But
Yeah. Just it's okay all the way through, and then there's a bit of an anticlimax at the end.
Yeah,
and I don't know
if
it's just not very. It doesn't really offer anything new to the kind of your average, like, road movie or comedy performance movie.
It's good for filling a Sunday afternoon when you're a bit bored, like. It's good for, like, oh, ITV2's playing Clockwise. Ah, go on. Like, you know.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's how I first saw it as well.
That's how you see all your films, Anthony. You only ever watch things on a Sunday afternoon. But, yeah, if we were to try and crowbar in some kind of rating, it's like a clock. It's like a pocket watch, because it's old-fashioned. It's very British things, you know. It's kind of not that funny, but you can appreciate a pocket watch. But it's kind of outdated and doesn't really have, like, no one has a pocket to put a pocket watch in. No one has watches hardly ever. You just look at your phone or whatever. So it's out of date. It doesn't bring anything new to the table. It's elegant and nice to some extent. I'm struggling, but I think it's kind of like a pocket watch, a kind of old fashioned type.
Yeah, I see what you're getting. Yeah, fair enough. I there aren't that many types of time devices. I don't know. I suppose it's more akin to like a long kind of slightly tedious journey, like an actual like road journey on a Sunday afternoon, and you're going to grandma's house and the kids are in the back and you forgot to pack the Game Boy, so they're fighting.
It's a bit of a slog, but probably some funny things happened. There's some good anecdotes to come out of it, perhaps. You've laughed, you've learnt, and you've been frustrated. You know, it's a journey. It is a journey, and it is like a car journey.
But it's more like a trip to grandma's house than a high-speed chase up the country.
That's right. And like all good car journeys, you're really glad when it's over.
Yes.
No, but, you know, it's fine. It's not a bad movie. It's not terrible. It's just okay.
Yeah,
it's mildly amusing.
It's just your average road movie that doesn't really offer much new.
No.
But it's okay.
So it's okay. We're not.
If you like John Cleese, you like this film.
We're not anti-clockwise. I see the second time. Did it work the second time? I don't think it did.
It would have. You just let it go.
Just let it go. So we're not anti. I should have just put it in at the end. Instead of, I was too excited to say anti-clockwise, and I ruined it twice. But anyway, I think that does it for clockwise, though, right?
Yes, I think so.
We didn't talk about John Cleese's moustache. Anything you want to say about it?
It's the same moustache he always has.
It is. I just like a moustache. I don't know. I think he's got a good look. The moustache, balding hair, very headmasterly. Not that our headmaster had a moustache. Anyway, while I ramble on to myself, I'll end the recording so the listeners can go and do their other things.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.